This episode of Bonfireside Chat is brought to you by patrons such as yourself. If you head on over to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, you can join the legion of awesome people who make this network possible.
Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
My name is Gary Butterfield, and my name is Cole Ross. Nope, that's not Cole. It's just me this episode, because my partner and your friend of mine, Cole Ross, is a little bit under the weather this week, so he has the week off. This is a very special episode of Bonfireside Chat, a cursed favorite, where I am talking to some members of the Souls fan art community. We had this idea to do this episode a while back, because the Souls games are very collaborative. They do inspire the kind of passion and interest that make people dedicate hours upon hours to examining them. Usually we spend time talking to people who examine the kind of mechanics with our PvP and speedrun episodes, or the lore with the rest of our episodes. But now we want to talk to people who do kind of a more traditional, concrete form of art. So I have three interviews I've conducted lined up for you. I want to make a quick note. The audio quality, because I did these on my end, is not as good as our usual standards. Cole, you know, through your Patreon dollars, we have a fancy set of, you know, equipment and compressors and the like that make us sound really good. Those reside in Cole's apartment, not mine. So while my microphone sounds good and I can make these solo parts sound good, the parts where I do the interview, it sounds a little bit rougher because I don't have that that stuff. So I ask you to forgive me. Specifically, our interview with Peter Nordstrom, that audio quality, due in no part and no fault of his, is kind of rough. So I ask for your patience, and I appreciate. I appreciate the same. So without further ado, we're getting into our interviews. The first up is with Allison Baker from legodarksouls.tumblr.com. Then I'm going to be talking to Solo, who is a Twitch streamer and has a DeviantArt page and a Tumblr who does digital paintings inspired by the Souls games. And finally, I am talking to Peter Nordstrom, who does really, really impressive sculptures based on the Souls games. And hopefully you like it, and I'll be back at the end to kind of wrap things up. And I am here with Allison Baker, who runs the legodarksouls.tumblr.com. Hello, Allison.
Hello, Gary.
Hey. So people who listen to the show are probably already familiar with your stuff. We've brought it up on the show multiple times. If you go to the Facebook page, oftentimes our logo or just art on there is from you. So people probably know your stuff, but if not, why can you speak to just a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, sure. I have been for the past couple years or so been making like fan art for the Soul series games using Lego bricks.
Yeah, that is it is really, if people who are listening to this don't actually know it, it's really impressive because it's not like a mosaic style thing or anything like that. Like, there's really cool little 3D sculptures that would make, or these little kind of dioramas that would make anybody, like when I see them, I always think I wish that there was an official Souls Lego set.
Yeah.
Like, pretty bad. That would get me. I don't buy Legos generally, but I would buy those pretty hard. So that is very cool. And we just so very happy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Just want to talk a little bit about how you got into this stuff. So when did you how long have you been on board the Souls train?
Oh, since the very beginning. I was one of the people who imported the like Asian version of Demon Souls.
Hmm.
So I was playing that before it came out over here.
What about it? What did you see that made you want to import it?
Well, actually, it was my one of my real good friends had imported it first, and he was just like, "This game is amazing. You have to try it." And he brought it over, and I did, and it was just, yeah, it was basically I hadn't really played anything like it before, but I was just instantly hooked.
Yeah, it's got that kind of effect on people. And then you've just followed it. So in the spirit of disclosure, lest anybody call me out about journalistic ethics or anything like that, Allison and I are friends on the internet. So so I am privy to your various status updates and the like on social media. And you are one of the harder core fans of the series that I know. As sure. Somebody who has put like so many hundreds of hours into this podcast, so that definitely bears out. It was just like love at first sight.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you when did you get the idea? Like, at what point in your fandom or time with the series did you get the idea that you wanted to start doing art kind of based on it?
Well, I've always been a big fan of Lego, and I've got hundreds of dollars worth of Lego sitting around my house, and it's basically embarrassing. But one day
are they all scattered on the floor?
Sometimes it's hazardous.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. It's a living nightmare. Wake me up.
Okay, so the story about how I got started with the Souls Lego, though, it's I was at the store and I saw the Lego set for the Lord of the Rings Weathertop. I'm looking at it, and I think, with just a few modifications, that would make a pretty good Firelink shrine. So I bought it, and I took it home and worked on it a bit. And that was, like, my first model. I just sort of, put a little bonfire in the middle, set a little knight there, and threw the tree up there, and it was like, okay, looks kind of like Firelink shrine. So I posted those pics a few places and, kind of forgot about it. But it was maybe like a year after that, the Lego came out with a new like castle line of toys, and I saw one that had like a dragon with it, and I thought, I could take that dragon, make a pretty good, recreation of sort of the Hellkite Drake on the bridge scene from Dark Souls. That picture, when I made that, it one of my most popular ones, and I posted that around, and kind of took off from there.
I'm looking at that one now because it's part of the banner image for the blog.
Right.
And it
right.
also looks like 1-2 a little bit from Demon Souls.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, which is really cool. And you've done stuff from all of the series, correct?
Yeah. I've done a little bit. Well, I didn't get too into the Dark Souls 2 stuff, but I've done a fair amount of like Demon Souls and then Dark Souls and a little bit of Bloodborne now.
Does the when you make these, is your process generally the same? Like you are in the Lego aisle of the store as you do, and you see a set that reminds you of a Souls thing, or do you have a kind of arsenal now? So you work from the scene backwards.
I've just got so many like pieces and stuff now. I just try to think of something that I could make, and then look at my collection and see if I have the pieces that I need and kind of go from there.
It's interesting the way that it kind of evolves, because prior to that you'd almost choose kind of it seems like it would be easiest to choose kind of a crime of opportunity where like, this Lego set has done some of the work for me.
Right.
And
right.
Now you actually can kind of choose your favorite scenes and kind of move backwards from there.
So my other favorite piece I've done is the Gaping Dragon piece you might've seen. And it's probably one of my more popular ones. That came about because I was posting, I think, the original Hellkite Drake picture on the Something Awful forums, and somebody replied to it with, "Oh yeah, let's see you do the Hellkite let's see you do the Gaping Dragon." So I was like, "Okay, let's see what I can do."
It's you can kind of see like when you look at the stuff that you do, because you can see with that one, and you can see a little bit of the Last Giant one as well. That it does seem like you're working, like there is like a sense of like, oh, let's find a mountain that's tough to climb, a little bit. Like, a little like this would be kind of a challenging thing to do in Lego brick, specifically. Because the Gaping Dragon one is very impressive and looks like a Lego Gaping Dragon. Like, it's not mistakable for anything else.
Right.
It reads like instantly. Yeah. And then you also do this kind of production with it where you put the appropriate backgrounds, in there. And that helps a lot as well. But even down with the Last Giant, like it reads immediately as such, even though, if you think about that model in the game, it's hard to think of it in physical Lego brick. Like, you can think of it in the kind of a Minecraft version, but that's not really what you're doing. Like, there are, it's not all right angles. They're not, it's not a pixel version.
Yeah.
Of it. You know, which is, which I think is very cool, specifically.
Thank you.
So, and then the, so do you, is there anything do you, that you think there is that's about, Dark Souls 2 that is that, you know, the reason why you did less art based on it? Is it a an aesthetic consideration of the game, or were you just less interested, or was there less demand? Or
I it's hard to say. I go through periods where I'm, like, really motivated, and then sometimes I'm just like, eh. And I don't know. I think Dark Souls 2, you know, you guys have been defending it, and I'm not going to say it's a bad game, but I just, I didn't like it as much as the other one, so...
Well, let's let me crack my knuckles and we'll get into that.
It didn't inspire me as much as maybe the other games did.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. Well, I think that, like, you could argue, and that we would agree, even though we both like that game, that, like, there aren't bosses that are kind of striking, or there aren't maybe as many set pieces that are striking in that game.
Yeah, I actually tried a couple times to do kind of a Majula scene, but it never really turned out how I wanted it, so...
Yeah, because I mean, part of the reason why Majula is impressive and good is that it's, like, it's big.
Yeah.
You know, and it has that context around it. It has the ocean, it has the sun, and those things are hard to do in block form.
Right.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I know that when Bloodborne came out, because Bloodborne has a different kind of design aesthetic that I definitely felt would resist your treatment, just because there are fewer kind of Lego sets that take this kind of Victorian.
Yeah.
Thing. But I know that you got you did recreate the cover image of it and got some kind of attention.
I just kind of did, like, kind of an action figure sized version of sort of like the main hunter, and, you know, tweeted it around, and some of the devs on Bloodborne saw it and were retweeting it and stuff, so yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, the interactions are adorable. Like, those are also on your blog.
Yeah,
and that's real fun. Yeah. Which is very cool. I know that one of the guys, Jun Yoshino,
yes,
added it to his Twitter header.
Yeah, he had it as, like, his background picture there for a while.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah, it was cool.
It works, too. Like, the trick weapon, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And what is the handle of that? It looks like a tongue of some kind.
Oh, you know, I think it's one of the tentacles from the Sarlacc pit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are there like, sets that you end up going back to a lot with the Souls games? Like, are there... Because there's kind of, like, a cross-aesthetic that you can kind of draw from that. Like, if there are Lego sets that give you these building blocks, and you draw from the same kind of sets over and over, like, you can kind of draw some aesthetic similarities between those and the Souls games.
Yeah. Well, like I said, they have, like, a castle theme, which is, like, knights, so that's, like, kind of a no-brainer. So
it's interesting that, like, you end up going for, like, such a disparate thing, like using the tongue or the tentacle as a handle.
Well, it has that, like, real curviness to the handle, and I thought, you know, it's really hard to recreate a curve like that in Lego, but then I'm looking through my stuff, and I thought, you know, it's sort of like pit tentacles, like, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks real good. You a little bit earlier, you talked a little bit about, you know, you had tried to make a Majula scene. Can you speak to a little some other things that you tried to create that kind of resisted the treatment?
I actually recently was trying to put together sort of the in Cathedral Ward, like the main cathedral tower. It looks kind of like almost like a big window. It looks kind of like a clock face or something on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was sort of prototyping, like, a model of that, but it didn't get very far.
Is there anything specifically that so those are things that you've attempted to do and not made it. Is there kind of like a dream thing or like a dream scene that you would like to make? Or like, so let me put it this way. If tomorrow Lego got the From Software license and they started announcing sets, like what would be the one that you'd be most excited about?
Wow. I think a really neat, like, Sen's Fortress playset would work really well.
Oh, man.
Had a lot of, like, moving pieces and stuff.
It'd be like the Ninja Turtles sewer layer with, like, the chutes.
Right, yeah.
And stuff. Oh, boy. I've wanted, like, sixth scale, or not sixth scale, six-inch Dark Souls action figures forever.
Yeah.
You can go online and find a couple of people who have made custom ones, but they're more expensive than I can pay. But that would be amazing.
Yeah.
So when you sit down to make one of these, what is kind of the process? Like, what do you sit down? You mentioned earlier that you were kind of prototyping that Cathedral Ward. What does that process look like?
Usually I'll try to source, several different pictures from the game or whatever I'm trying to build. And then I just, go through my pieces and kind of, sort out the proper, colors and shapes that I think I'll need. And then I just start throwing the bricks together, seeing what sticks.
There's no, graph paper or any,
No. You just kind of, just keep doing it, trial and error.
Have you ever broken the skin stepping on Lego?
Several times.
Okay, even like that, that's terrifying. I stepped on a part of a belt buckle.
Oh.
And punched through my skin, and it was thick. It was not a needle. It was like putting a BB.
Wow.
Punching through a callus. It made a sound.
Yeah, I've not done major damage, but I have gotten the occasional, puncture wound.
it's got to be a hazard of the trade. If there was some kind of Lego insurance.
Well. I usually try to keep my area mostly tidy, but sometimes a piece will scatter off, and I won't find it until it's too late.
How do you keep your collection organized?
Organized might be a bit of a strong word. Several little, clear storage drawers, sorted by piece type.
Okay, not by color. Or anything like that. And then that's piece type, articulated pieces, and then just kind of size and...
Yeah, sorting by color is kind of a mistake, because then you realize, I need a 2x1 black piece, and then, so you look in your tub of just all black Legos, and you say, this is going to take forever.
Yeah, well, fuck me.
If you go into your tub of 2x1 pieces, it's really easy to find the black one. So.
Do you ever, when I'm at the Lego store at the mall, I like to thrust my hands into the pits of the very small pieces of Legos because it feels good. It's it is pleasurable. It makes me think I would do this all the time if I ever had that many Legos of the same type. And then as a follow-up question, do you have enough Legos to fill up a bathtub? Those questions aren't related in any way.
I agree with that sensation of just kind of running your hand through the Legos. I get that. I might be able to fill up my bathtub if I was to take apart all the sets that I have, but yeah.
if something happened, you made, a Dungeons & Dragons second edition style wish and the stipulation of the genie was that you're going to lose all of your Legos the next day and you only had 24 hours left. This is a 2-part question. Part one, would you fill up a bathtub with Legos? Part two, could I... borrow your bathtub.
I would try it, and you're more than welcome to come over and try it.
Okay, thank you. Look forward to your 2016 Kickstarter to fly me up to the Midwest to take a Lego bath. you would be finding Legos forever.
I wouldn't even want to know where they would get stuck.
Yeah, that's an uncomfortable proposition. Yeah, how many sets do you have? Actually completed sets, would you say?
It's impossible to tell.
More than 30?
More than 30 individual sets?
Yeah, completed, up on display. Not loose pieces, but
Right, yeah. Well, just from where I'm sitting, I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm not going to keep counting because the number. Yeah, more than 30.
That's very cool. Do you have a favorite non-Souls related, commercially released set?
I really they do a series of modular buildings. They're just really detailed, exteriors and interiors. I've been collecting those. I really like those. Yeah. I mean, I have my Super Star Destroyer, which is kind of my crown jewel. I don't know.
Is it your favorite? Yeah. It's hard to... make you make the Sophie's choice of one Lego set must live and one Lego set must die.
I have the Ghostbusters car, which is really nice. Yeah.
And if Lego were to, other than From Software, What is your dream license that LEGO would get a hold of? I know you're real into the Simpsons ones. They recently got those and you got...
Yeah, those are cool. I'm working on collecting those. My dream LEGO license? Probably Star Trek. There's a lot of cool ships from Star Trek that I would like to build. But...
Yeah, that would be awesome. Like, I've been on the record of the show of saying how, like, I'm not the biggest Star Wars guy. I like Star Trek a lot more than I like Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm a super... I don't want to throw the word Trekkie out there, but...
Yeah. Well, you get on some kind of list.
Let's just say I like Star Trek a lot.
Yeah. Let's just say we both do, and leave it at that. Here's the thing that I'll cut out, but I'll tell you. Actually, you know what? Nobody in my game group... No, that's not true. Brayden might listen to it. No, he doesn't play Bloodborne. Nobody in my game group listens to this. I'll say it. So, speaking of Star Trek, and this is tangential, but once a year in the summer, me and my game group, my tabletop group, go and rent a cabin on the beach and do a weekend of games.
Yeah.
And this year, I have found in a thrift store a Star Trek The Next Generation themed How to Host a Murder Mystery box set. Where you make invitations out to, like, Counselor Troy and Data, and then people pretend to be them and do a murder mystery. And it has a suggested menu and everything. And I'm going to surprise my friends with it.
That sounds amazing.
I always do a gift bag or, like, swag bags for the thing. And I'm going to put the invitations in. They're just like, Counselor Troy, your presence is formally requested on the bridge. And then it has recipes, and one of them is for Cornish game hens, and the recipe is Astro Hens.
Wow.
Like, yep.
Nice.
That I will be sure to report back.
Since you're running that, you know, it would make sense for you to be Picard, but I think with the beard, you'd be a better Riker.
I could be like Negaverse Riper. I almost just said something very bad.
Whoa.
Like reverse universe Riker, if he had like a thyroid condition and really let himself go. It was just like the Riker who has never been a sex symbol to any ladies and never had sex with any green aliens.
You're going to have to practice that thing where he sits in the chair, but like right over the back of it.
Yeah. 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 I'm just going to put my leg up on the table constantly. I think I just get to play a role in the game. Because there's no Picard. I think he summoned the mission, but everyone else. And it's funny too, because I love pieces of media that you can, laser point when they came out. Because you know what season this was made in, because one of the main characters is Ensign Roe.
Oh, right.
You know, since she wasn't on the show for very long.
Yeah.
But it's Ensign Roe, but before Dr. Pulaski. So it's still Crusher,
yeah,
but Roe. And I think it's just
that
like
would
one
have to
season.
Be season one, because Pulaski was season two.
Roe wasn't in season one, though, because it was Tasha. This is...
Uh-oh.
This is we're gonna get beat up.
Oh no,
we're gonna get on the list.
Pulaski was just one season though. I thought it was two, but maybe I'm crazy.
I think it might have been later. Maybe it was two, so this had to be like season three or four. But yeah, Pulaski was not for very very long. She's not long for this world. Before the actress just was like, fuck this shit.
She got tired of being an assassiner.
Yeah, exactly. Which is understandable because he's an assassin bot. Yeah, and then, and finally, just, and this is a request, if that magic genie comes and he's going to destroy all your Legos or anything, you've made little Lego versions of Cole and I for the show.
Yes.
And this, I guess, isn't so much a question as just a suggestion. If that were to happen, you were to have that happen, you should send me my Lego, because I would love to have it.
I've almost done that a couple of times, but I hold it back just in case I need to use it again.
I like that you keep doing stuff with it, but also... I'm just dancing around saying if you're ever going to die. That's not true. I'm just kidding. It is not. I don't want it in your will to have that Lego piece. So I would rather have you be alive than have that Lego piece, which is a faint compliment. Don't take that as much. Yeah, as the faintest compliment I've ever given anyone. Thank you. Again, thanks for taking the time. Talk to us. I love your shit. And people who are listening to this, if you haven't already, you need to check it out because it's the neatest thing you'll look at online today.
Yeah. Thank you.
I keep waiting for it to show up on one of the AV clubs, great job internet things. Because even if I didn't know you, like if I would have seen this, I'm like, holy shit, this is really special. So.
Well, thank you.
And just that address again for everyone listening is legodarksouls.tumblr.com.
Yep.
And if people are looking to follow you, you know, we follow that Tumblr, but if they're looking to follow you on social media or anything, where can people find you on Twitter?
On Twitter, I am at AllisonByProxy, and you can find me hanging out on Facebook at any of the DuckFeed pages most times.
And we appreciate your support. All right, and I'm here with Peter Nordstrom. Hi, Peter. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah.
About this, for people out there who are listening who are maybe not familiar, can you say a little bit about what you do?
Well, for the past about 3 years, I've been making and selling mostly Dark Souls statues.
Yeah, I bet you people, even if people are listening to this and they don't necessarily know your name, I bet they know your work.
Yeah.
Because these come to me a lot. Like someone will just, you know, Twitter post me or throw on our Facebook page something that you've done. And it took me a little while to actually put, you know, two and two together and say like, hey, I should find the person who's doing these and follow them on Facebook and see all the stuff as it's happening.
Yeah. I'm kind of, I hide in my cave and make work. I don't really, promote myself, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, well, there's not a lot of people doing this, I don't think.
Yeah. I've seen a few people make statues, but not really mass produce or so. I don't mass produce, but I mean, I make them, you know, pretty much all day. Most people just make a couple here and there for fun.
Mm-hmm. And you've been involved a little bit in an official capacity. I know you made some statues that Namco Bandai used for a contest.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the first Dark Souls, they did a online contest. It was Treasures Untold. And they had me do 5 statues for that.
Yeah, and those are some of your best work. Those are great.
I would say yes and no, because I feel like I've gotten a lot better since then, but those are definitely very good ones. I put a lot of time and made those really special.
Yeah, I don't mean to say that like the stuff you've done past is not good so much as the subject matter and the kind of I remember seeing them when the game came out and just coveting.
Yeah.
On them, so I had this pretty strong, you know, desire or emotional like impulse for those because they do look really good. How did you get started with kind of sculpture in general?
I've loved art all my life. It wasn't always a career type thing. It was more just a hobby. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't have a lot of direction. For the most part, I was working for my stepdad, and then started taking some more classes on sculpting and figurative sculpture, and I kind of got into Demon Souls, and I was just a fan. I just wanted to create pieces, you know, for stuff I love. So that's kind of where that got me into, you know, Dark Souls.
So it wasn't something you did a lot of sculpture stuff before Souls kind of came around?
Not. I did a little bit. I'd make stuff that I like. You know, I was really into Tool, the band. Because they were really artistic and they did clay animation and there wasn't any, you can't buy Tool statues. So it's like, I'll just make my own, you know, I'll learn how to sculpt and I'll learn how to do figures and I'll make some main arts and stuff. And that was just kind of the fun and just took off from there.
Yeah, sculpt the change you want to see in the world.
Pretty much. So, I mean, yeah. The way I think about art is like the job of an artist is to make the world more beautiful. That's their job, you know, that's what they do. So that's what I want to do.
Yeah. You've been into the, you know, you talked about Demon Souls. You've been into the series kind of from the beginning.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Demon Souls and super excited when Dark Souls came out.
Yeah, it's interesting that the two things. So one of the things, the common threads I found in talking to people about this is I'm interested in where the fandom of the game and where the artistic expression meet, and it's interesting that in most cases the answer is more than just like an aesthetic, like I just like the way that it looks and like that, like, you know, people have talked about how like the themes, you know, of the games like applied to their real life and kind of help them, implied to how they feel about creating art, and then you're saying that like this stuff is just stuff, it's stuff that you liked but it's stuff that you wanted to see and there just wasn't anyone doing it. So you decided to bring it upon yourself to make it, which is very cool. And that's, I think that's really neat. So they're very elaborate, and you talked about how you make them for consumption. They're not mass produced, but they are available. Can you talk a little bit about your process, how you kind of do the first one, and then how you go about making more?
There's a couple of different clays that I use. There's Magic Sculpt, which is originally made for taxidermy. It's for like eyes and ears and, you know, really easy to use. It's a two-part epoxy that you mix and then it dries in about 3 hours, so you can sculpt it really soft and build upon it, so you can build layers. So I'll make an armature of the body, you know, put the first layer of clay on, do some sculpting, and then add the arms, legs, head, you know, just sculpt it piece by piece. Once I have the original done, I'll make a mold. The company's Rebound, or it's Smooth On, sorry. The company's called Smooth On, and then the product's called Rebound 25, the mold material. Mm-hmm. And so I'll make a mold. It's like a brush on, two part mix again. And it's a rubber, so you just peel it off. And then you can pour, then the smooth cast is the material that I pour into it. It's another mix and it dries in about 10 minutes. So I'll pour the casts. And oftentimes I'll have to make 3 or 4 different molds for one piece because it's just elaborate and I have to, you know, cut it up and then attach it or, you know, assemble the statue, glue them together, pin them with a metal pins or whatever. I don't know what you call them. So I'll assemble them and then paint them. And the whole process takes anywhere from like, you know, 2 to 5 hours per statue probably once I get it all done and have the mold, you know.
How long does it take usually to make the original?
I've been doing a lot of 8-inch statues because they're pretty, not easy, but they're affordable. They don't take too much material or time. They sculpt one of those probably between 15 to 25 hours, I would say, over 1 to 3 weeks, just depending on how much time I get to put into it. And then the larger ones take a lot longer. I did a, for Bandai Namco, after I made the original 5, they actually commissioned me to make 4 more that they wanted to give away, but then they actually, I think they ended up liking them so much they kept them and they kind of hid them. One of them was a gaping dragon that they showed. They brought it to IGN and they had it on air a little bit. But the gaping dragon I made was 3-foot wingspan. I think that took about 2 months to make that because there was just so many. It was so big. There was like 2 sets of wings, 4 wings total, and like 2 sets of legs. And then, like, I think I put about 150 teeth inside, you know, the mouth or whatever it was. So that was the biggest piece I've done.
The picture of that's on that I've seen that's on your DeviantArt page.
Yeah,
it's leaning on the ledge of your porch.
Yeah, I took it outside and took a picture and I sent it to the guy at Bandai and I was like, here it is, you know. And then I think they took professional pictures of it, but then they didn't like release it or whatever, you know. So I don't. That's like the only picture I have.
My impulse when I see that sculpture on that ledge, it reminds me of how I go to the zoo and like kids are leaning over a lion's cage.
Yeah.
And I want to run forward and save them.
Yeah.
Like I just want to pull it back. Like I just like, oh
yeah,
no.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, you took care of it. I'm sure it's very heavy as well. So it was sturdy on there, but
yeah,
just,
I'd say about 12 pounds or so, something like that.
Yeah. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. I think they have it. They either have it at IGN or Bandai has it at their headquarters. I'm not really sure where it is.
It may or may not be that one. Do you have a favorite piece that you've done?
That is hard to say because I like a lot of them so much. Sometimes I make a piece and I love it and then like I show it and people just don't like it as much. I don't know why, but, I did some quay logs that I really like. I guess a couple of people kind of like those. And then I did one, I have a piece that I haven't shown yet. From Dark Souls 2, I did the Royal Swordsman. And that's one of my favorite armor sets. And I made that, but I have not shown a picture of that anywhere. So I have to do that sometime.
Do you find that usually, is it something that like some of the more recent stuff you've done ends up being the stuff you like? Because you had mentioned that you feel like you're just kind of like always getting, you know, kind of better and working on it. And you can see that in the work. Like you can see that kind of refining
there's
stuff.
Different reasons. Sometimes I like it because of the subject matter, because it's a really cool character, and then sometimes I like it because it just turned out really well, because I did a really good job, creating it.
When you choose a character, do you look at, is it just stuff that you like, or is it an aesthetic consideration? Like, this would look very cool as a physical object, or is it, this is one of my favorite characters from the game or favorite creatures, and I just want to see it realized?
A little bit of both. Sometimes it's just a really cool character, but they don't look really cool. Like, I don't like Solaire. I like Solaire as a character, but I don't like his outfit. I didn't want to sculpt Solaire, like, forever. And it's got so many people requesting it and wanting it, I finally gave in and I made the one where he's like all beat up and worn out and bloody. And I was like, I'll just make him really cool, like how I want to make him,
yeah.
I probably sold about 150 of those so far. That was pretty popular. And then I got a lot of requests for the Praise the Sun pose, so I eventually made that one.
I like how, when you did the battle damaged Solaire, on your page, there was like an army of them.
Yeah.
Ready to ship out. So it's surreal just to see an image of like, oh, here's 12 Solaires walking towards me.
Yeah. Sometimes I have about 30 different statues on my table that I'm working on. You know, I don't really have time to take pictures every time I make them, just I'm so busy. I'm constantly pouring statues. I have pieces everywhere. I have some half assembled, half painted.
Do you do this as a full-time gig, or do you do this in supplement of something else?
This is my full-time job. This is what I love. I don't know if
that's awesome.
You saw my post on Facebook, I think about yesterday or something. I was talking about how if you go on vacation from your job, then you should not go back to your job, because your job should be vacation. Like, you should love what you do. And I want to do what I love, and I just made it and make good money. It's hard because so much work, so much repetitiveness, so many hours, but I enjoy it, so I want to keep doing it.
Yeah, it is. It's really, you're clearly like very talented. I'm a big fan of what you do. It's really neat to see that you've been rewarded as such.
Yeah.
That kind of hard work and talent.
I think a lot of my customers don't even realize that I did work for the company. They like block that a lot. Like, I'll mention it here and there, but sometimes we'll be talking to somebody. I always talk, fans message me, I always talk to them, and I like communicating. But I'll like bring something up, I'm like, oh, I didn't even know you were that guy. I've seen those. I love them.
Is there anything, any souls, character or situation or anything like that, or monster, that you've always wanted to do and have not been able to, or that has kind of escaped you, like you've kind of bounced off or it's resisted your treatment?
I like a lot of Demon Souls, and I haven't done a whole lot. I've done a few pieces. I'm not sure if there's a character or boss that I haven't done. I'll make time to do stuff that I like, because that's my favorite thing to do, is to create an original piece. So I always try to find a couple hours here or there to work on something. Make sure I get them. Like, I really like Grave Lord Nito, and made a really big one. I don't know if you saw the.
Yeah.
I made that was, yeah, but, was a really fun project. And that was one of my personal pieces. Like, I wanted to make it so bad, I just went out and did it.
Do you keep them around? Like, do you keep the originals around, or is everything that you do for sale?
The original pieces that I sculpt, I have like two big boxes full of all these pieces, and they're not painted or anything. They're all gray or white or whatever. They're kind of off color. Off-white.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have a big buckets of them, and then sometimes the molds will wear out and I'll have to recast it or make a new mold. So I'll go find the pieces and then I'll have to make it again. If I'm like, they last about 25 to 50, the Solaire and like the Siegmeier. I sold about 150 of those also. I had to make about three molds of each of those so I get through that.
Do you display your stuff? Do you have like things around your apartment?
I live in a house, but I rent a house.
Or a house, rather.
Rent a house, yeah. Yeah, I have a shelf in the living room that I'm looking at right now. It has about 15 pieces on it. And then I have a couple other around the house.
Hmm.
But I don't even have all the different pieces. I don't even have time to make all of the ones for myself.
No. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, there's never enough time. Like, that's the currency that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Figure out how to get more time.
So with the games, like if you look at the kind of spread of the sculpture work you've done, it definitely seems to favor Dark Souls 1.
That is where I guess the best characters are and the most fans and the most love is for the lore and the story and the characters. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is if it was something that it was just about the actual characters and creatures from the game,
yeah,
or if it was something like something about that design lent itself to what you do more, or if it was just a preference.
Well, I would say that the characters are better designed. The armor sets and the bosses and stuff are more interesting. Dark Souls 2 felt kind of rushed with character design. Like, they just throw a character in a room with you and there's not a lot of atmosphere or not a lot going on with the character. They kind of have, you know, two or three movesets that kind of straightforward. It's not as engaging. You know, you don't really connect to it like you would to like a Torius, you know, where you're in his little cave and he's, you know, dripping with that purple stuff. I'm not sure what that is.
You know, OJ purple stuff.
Yeah, and he's just, there's so much more dynamic to his character than like any character in Dark Souls 2. I mean, I guess the DLC in Dark Souls 2 was a little bit more interesting to kind of put more time into making that more the environment better, I think.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's more or less what I think, and I think is kind of the prevailing opinion in the community.
Yeah.
As well, but it's interesting because you are a fan of the games, but you're also, you have this new way to approach them that most people don't.
Yeah.
Or you have this kind of creative outlet for it.
Yeah, most customers will buy, most buy one, and then sometimes they'll buy two, and they display them by their computer, like on the shelf or something. They just have their favorite character. And then I have some customers that want to buy like five or six or seven pieces, you know, just come back and every time they have some money, they'll buy something.
Yeah, that's definitely is really cool, kind of desk candy.
Yeah.
Just kind of closing out and everything. You know, what do you want to see? So, and this is kind of if you don't have an answer for this, that's fine, because I just kind of popped into my head, and this may be a nonsense question. But so based on kind of what you do and the kind of things that you like sculpting, even down to an aesthetic, like what would you like to see them do in future games, in Dark Souls 3 or like the Bloodborne DLC or something like that? Is there something aesthetically that you want them to capture or recapture from the past in the series that you'd really like to kind of create a real life 3D version of?
I like characters that have really deep emotion, deep past. I like to express emotion through my artwork, and I try to find characters that I can do that. Not all of them you can, but just when, like, if there's like a love story or something, maybe, you know, lost love or you know, like the Kiaran and Akoris kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, those are really popular for statues, and they're fun to make.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've appreciated your work for a long time.
Yeah.
And really, really appreciate the chance to talk to you.
Yeah.
About it. Where can people find you online?
Probably Facebook is the best place, but find my Facebook art page, search my name. I think if you just search Peter Nordstrom, like statues or artwork or something. Or you can just Google my name with Dark Souls and there'll be tons of stuff and you can find me through there. But yeah, you just message me, talk about something, interested in a statue or whatever.
It is a good, I love, one of the things about not a lot of people who do fan art keep kind of a primary Facebook presence, and I love that you do, because I follow you on that, and my normal Facebook feed is, you know, stuff from relatives and people from back home and everything, and then every once in a while there's this super badass statue that is in the middle of all of that.
Every month or two or so I'll make something and put it up.
Yeah, very cool. All right, and I am here with Solo. Hello, Solo.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Just got home from work.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, in the spirit of full disclosure, you and I actually met in person at a Namco Bandai event last year.
Yes, in San Francisco.
Yeah, which was very cool. And I was happy to meet you and make your acquaintance there. And I kind of filed in the back of my head, like, if we ever do something like that, this is somebody who you know, I want to talk to. Can you kind of go into a little bit and explain what you do?
Well, as far as, like, the online community kind of involvement, I stream on Twitch a bunch of random games, mostly Soul games nowadays. But I also am moving more toward just drawing more arts in general, just like video games. And in the past 2 years or so, I've mostly been focused on just drawing for the Souls games, just the kind of stuff that I like for selfish reasons, because I need wallpapers and I draw my own wallpapers.
And also others as well, because I know the couple pieces that you've done. So, and we were talking in the green room and I was telling you this, but one of the pieces that you've done that I really love is this Iron Tarkus versus the Iron Golem picture that I had as the backdrop on my phone forever, without putting two and two together that I actually knew the artist, which is pretty great. And I definitely advise anybody who's listening to this who's not familiar with the work to check that out. I know a lot of people, also I've seen some screenshots people have sent in, who people have made backdrops with the Messengers wallpaper.
Oh, nice.
That you did.
Yeah, I definitely remember making those with in mind, thinking I really want to have a Bloodborne background, but I see them carrying this little scroll and I want to like fill in text with that. So I made an alternate like open scroll and closed scroll version and put that as my wallpaper, and also released the template out for anyone else who wants to use it for like YouTube videos or make their own text and send it to people. So that's definitely out there.
I've definitely seen a couple people who have done such, who have either hit me up on Twitter or the like. Can you talk just a little bit about how you got into art in general?
Art in general? I've been drawing since first grade. Like my mom would put me through art classes because I wanted to draw, but she told me that I can't make a career out of art because I have to find a way to make money and artists never make any money. So I just went to college with a business degree and did marketing and website design, but always on the side, I've always been, drawing like fan art for other games I've been playing. I wanted to make comics at the time. But I really hated my job. It was terrible. I eventually made my way into like mobile games, but I still just like making fan art during my own time and just being able to illustrate.
And how did you get into, so the kind of the second piece of it, how did you get into the Souls game? Like, one of the things that I like about all the people that we're talking to today, that I've noticed, and part of the reason why I chose the artist I did, is everyone is really into the games as well. So when I look at, your stuff online or Allison's or Peter's, like, I see evidence that like, oh, these are people who actually are just, enthusiast and appreciators like myself, as well as, you know, just kind of talented creators. So how did you get into Souls, and what made you want to, kind of combine these two aspects of your life?
I guess at the time, I think Dark Souls was released in 2011, but it wasn't until the Prepare to Die edition 2012. It was during those years when I was having a pretty rough time emotionally because my art wasn't where I wanted it to be. It's like this, I had a bunch of failed projects, and things never really turned out the way I wanted it to be. So I kind of just turned to games and streaming on Twitch as my way to escape and to ignore the fact that my art wasn't making me happy in any way. But Dark Souls was a really difficult game. It was put me through a lot of struggles, and having to like suffer through all those like Capra demons and the assholes of Wanderland with the archers, I really had a hard time in that area. And Ornstein and Smo, like, just knowing that I as a character in this game have to suffer through all that, like all the other characters are probably going through such difficult travels and Hollow eventually. It's just all very sad, and it makes me kind of more emotionally invested in that. And with that, like, I kind of, not at the time, I didn't realize this, but afterward, when I, like, figured I really liked this game, but I had to persevere through a lot of points throughout the way, like, through each boss. Like, it took me, like, a couple of weeks. I put it down, and I pick up the game again and just, like, defeat the boss. And it felt great, like, being able to achieve that. With art, because I was struggling so much, I had basically just scrapped a lot of the projects. I even had a lot of art on my hard drives that were completely wiped because I did really something. I did something stupid. I just kind of dropped my hard drive, so it kind of destroyed all my data. Just like having to start over with my art was basically in my mind, analogous to, you know, dying at a certain place and having to start over from a checkpoint in Dark Souls. So for me, I just wanted to get inspiration. Like, I didn't have a point of inspiration for my art, and I really resonated with Dark Souls, like, struggles and the perils that they went through, and I want to be able to depict the art that I wanted to do inspired by Dark Souls, because the struggles in that game really, like, helped me through going through the struggles I was going through with my art.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think you can make the argument that that's kind of the... If the games are about something on the whole, you know, and if you want to have a kind of a positive reading about it, it is about overcoming this adversity. Mm-hmm. You know, the games will, the narratives and the like will tend to undercut that at some point. Like, yes, you made it, but then there's this air of futility in the end of the game, you know, most entries in the series of like, oh, well, and it just starts over again. you know, but you can't, that's on a macro level. On a personal level, you still have that kind of feeling. So, like, I think that part of the reason why these games have the appeal that they do is that I tried so fucking hard on this and then finally did it is, like, such a good feeling and does, I mean, you're the first person I've heard, like, articulate this, but, like, it does apply to a lot of real-life situations. So I can definitely see that being specifically resonant and kind of inspiring. And it's interesting, too, to hear you take this kind of inspiration for art about a game and, you know, game being a visual medium, it not necessarily being from the aesthetics, even though, like, I can, you know, I can see an appreciation for the aesthetics in your work, but coming from this kind of thematic underline throughout the game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I love the aesthetics, and including Bloodborne. It's just, like, it has that gritty feel to it. And I also like the more medieval-themed games in general, and Dark Souls kind of has that. Bloodborne is a little bit more Victorian, like, werewolf kind of feel. Mm-hmm. So if I had to pick one or the other, I'd probably pick the Dark Souls series. But both, like, the FromSoft games, like, including Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 2, like, in general, just the themes are really nice, and I do like their game aesthetics, and even their concept art is really awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Those Design Works books are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
For that, do you have? Can you talk a little bit about your process? So, like, what makes you decide you want to depict a specific character or scene, and then kind of step by step what you do to create that? And I know that you'll stream this process sometimes as well, but for people who maybe are not familiar or who are just listening.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Usually, I would prefer to play the games myself first before attempting any art, but because of my schedule and I don't have as much time, I'll go on Twitch and watch people play through the games. I mean, I did play Dark Souls 1 and Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 2 all on my own, but for Demon's Souls, I probably watched Peeve and Sonos play through that before playing it myself, and it, like, watching those games just, like, makes me want to do art, even for Dark Souls 1, watching them as well. So, basically, I would, like, pick a moment that really resonated with me, and usually it involves me having to play through it myself, and I would go on the Reddits, like r/Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 or even Demon Souls, and read through a lot of fan theories. I'll also watch YouTube videos, and then I would go into the games and actually start taking screenshots of the moments that I really like. So, for example, the Iron Golem versus Tarkus, there was this one YouTube clip where they summoned the NPC Tarkus, and they basically took binoculars and just watched the NPC mm-hmm. totally destroy Iron Golem and eventually get him to fall off the cliff. And mm-hmm. I really thought it was a hilarious moment, and I had, like, great feelings of, like, appreciation when I fought Iron Golem myself and was able to get him to fall off as well. So I wanted to be able to paint that scene up, and might have taken me 5 or 6 hours, which is on the low end for the paintings I do, which usually take like 40 hours on the higher end. So it's a lot of time investment, just reference gathering, before actually attempting to paint it.
Yeah, there's so much detail in the stuff you do, and you work exclusively in digital, or do you sometimes also have a kind of a physical medium and we'll do stuff with that?
I did have a traditional background, but I've grown so much in love with all the Photoshop functions with layers and the undo button that I don't think I can ever go back. Definitely not as talented as the other artists who do traditional purely. Like there's John Devlin and there's Carson Druitt. They do a lot of traditional arts and I don't think I can, I can't pull that off. Like I like to redo my like brush strokes and like do color adjustments. So yes, it's all purely digital. I rarely do any pencil drawings nowadays.
I always feel the same way about writing. Like I don't think I could go back to using like writing by hand because the conveniences of word processing,
mm-hmm.
I just have spoiled me completely.
Yeah, you can like type up to 100, 120 words per minute, whereas writing, it's just you're always limited.
Yeah, it's so slow and it's ugly. Like I hate doing it. Like all of my writing now has degraded to where it looks like I'm writing with my offhand.
Mm-hmm.
Like both my right and my left hand are both left hands when it comes to actually handwriting. Things.
Yeah, same here. It's like in order to get my handwriting legible, I have to write in all caps because I can't do anything else otherwise.
And think about it. And I'm writing, 12 words a minute. Not quite. I mean, that's 6 seconds a word. But I'm not writing very or 5 seconds a word. But I'm not writing very very fast. So the for people who don't know the kind of style. That you work in is this very detailed, like a lot of it reminds me of the concept art that I've seen from the games. This kind of like dark and very detailed and really, for working in digital, like there's very tasteful use of things like lighting effects and things like that. Like it's not overdone because sometimes I think that one of the reasons why I like the stuff that you do more than some artists is just that I think that the temptation's there when you're working exclusively in digital to sometimes kind of overdo it with some of the effect type stuff. I don't know if that's a universal truth or if that's just me revealing a bias that I have. But it seems very tasteful in most of the stuff that you do.
That's good to hear because when I look at my old stuff, I see myself overdoing effects and I've been trying to tone it down over time.
Yeah. And so when talk to me a little bit about when you decided to start kind of letting people in on the process and letting people watch you actually create things.
As far as streaming on Twitch, I've pretty much started out streaming just games since I think 2009. It started with like Team Fortress 2 and Left 4 Dead. But you're allowed to capture your desktop, and it wasn't technically against the terms of service. Oh, I'm sorry. At the time, 2009, it was Justin TV before they turned Twitch.
Mm.
So at the time, it wasn't against their terms of service to stream art. And I think it was Portal 2. I really liked that game. I played it, and I wanted to make my own wallpaper for that. And I just started streaming from that point on, like a bunch of art stuff. But my issue back then was I would start a painting and then get discouraged and then put it down for like 6 months and then pick it back up. So it wasn't consistent art streams. And even now I still don't do consistent art streams. Been trying to get into the habit of doing art more regularly, but it's tough because I want to play games. But I do like streaming because it also gives me a chance to have people come in chat and talk to me about what they like in the games and kind of pointers that they'd like to see. And they can even critique my drawings as I'm working on it. There's a fine line between that and like backseat arting, but I do take their advice and think about it and think why they suggested and try to incorporate it into my artworks as well. So in a sense, there's like some community involvement from my chat to try to get their input into my artwork.
And it's an interesting use of Twitch because that's one of the big kind of draws of Twitch. Like if you're watching a Twitch streamer, you don't necessarily feel like you're directing them and what they do. But one of the things that I noticed when I started watching YouTubers and Twitch streamers, specifically with speedrunners, is they would run into a problem and they would just ask the community, like, hey, like I'm doing this sorcery speedrun. I need to find 2,000 souls somewhere. you know, where on my route is this? And then kind of crowdsource that knowledge and get the hundreds of people who are watching to kind of all put their heads together and come up with that answer for them and kind of inform what they're doing as they do it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, back before Twitch happened, people had to go to GameFAQs or, like, buy game guides to get those kinds of answers. Yeah. But now you've got people who already played through the games and just want to help you immediately and just tell you how to get things. I do try to not take in a lot of feedback when I'm playing the Souls games blind. But sometimes it's inevitable. And more recently for Bloodborne, I couldn't play it myself, and it's been how long since March? It's probably been 4 months. I've already watched a bunch of other streamers play it, so I'm definitely not playing it blind at this point. But in any case, chat really loves to give you hints and tips and try to backseat game your gameplay.
It's that same impulse where we all kind of like giving directions to somewhere where we know. You know, like somebody stops and they're lost. Like, it's like, I'll give this person directions. I've my good deed for the day. It's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic, and it's also something that I've found with a lot of people in the Souls community in particular is that, like, there is a lot of community interaction. Like, we do it for our show with our you know, we always ask for responses from people for our off-week episodes, and then, you know, you see it on Twitch and you see it on YouTube as well. You know, YouTubers are always every, you know, kind of lore master on YouTube says, like, hey, if there's anything, you know, I missed or you have any points or anything like that, leave them in the comments. And then you go and look at the comments and they're actually reading them and discussing it there. So it's just kind of the collaborative nature of this game. It kind of brings everybody together, which I think is super cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like being able to connect with people, especially when you don't have a lot of Souls fans in person, like to talk to someone over the internet who's just as passionate as you are and get to meet new people in person, like meeting you at the Namco event last year. It's just like really exciting, and it all starts with the internet. It's basically where it is.
Yeah, it's a rare and special thing. Like, it is what brought me and Cole together as well, was a message board, and then not specifically the Souls games, but kind of just a love of the hobby in general. And then the Souls games brought us closer.
Communal suffering.
Yeah, exactly. Well, misery loves company. Is there anything that you wanted to do that you can't? And that's kind of, I mean, if it doesn't necessarily apply to what you do, that's fine. But it's kind of my catch-all question for artists, like creative people. I always want to hear about, like, what's the thing that got away or the thing that has eluded you that you always wanted to do and maybe haven't or, you know, haven't yet or won't be able to do.
I know there was a painting I did of the archers from Dark Souls 1 that I never finished because I got distracted and never had time, but I do intend on going back one day. It might be a year from now, but I will go back to it because currently right now I'm working on a Bloodborne painting and a Mad Max painting, but I also want to do one of Eileen the Crow, and I still need to play through Bloodborne myself. And I want to go back and do a Demon's Souls painting of the Storm King, because I really like that fight.
Yeah.
It's probably one of my favorite moments in any Souls game, is just fighting against flying stingrays. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But having all those paintings is just like, they're all my backlog, and that's what I'm really fighting against. Is like, there's so many good moments to do. It's like, how do I choose which one to do or prioritize it all, and then some of them just kind of fall off the back end, and I'm not even sure if I'll come back to them. So as far as, like, being able to execute something, I would have to say it's the archers, because it's – I don't know how to convey Honor Orlando. Like, it's such a magnificent city and environment. Like, I don't know how to put that into a wallpaper. So at the time, I was thinking it should be a dual-screen wallpaper, just like a panoramic view. And you see, like, the archers shooting at, like a not a hollowed soldier, but just, like, someone who's running up the, the tresses. But it's very ambitious, and I'm not sure if I can pull it off, unfortunately.
it's such a huge time commitment
The
stuff that you do. Like, if you're looking at, like, 40 or 50 hours, like, that's a lot to ask of anybody.
Yeah, it's, like, basically a part-time job that I don't know if I have the time for. I'm also a really lazy person.
No, I don't know about that.
I like watching TV shows and playing games.
Yeah, the kind of semi-paid part-time job thing, I definitely understand, like, the, you know, doing something that's a huge time commitment on the side, because, mm-hmm. You know, that's something we understand very well. So where can people find you online?
So a lot of people know me by Solo, S-O-H-L, L-O-L. Wow, did I spell my own name right? S-O-H-L-O-L. Yes, that's right, Solo. Yeah. On Twitch, that's where I actually stream art live. But if you're not really interested in live streaming and just want to look at art or download wallpapers that I've done, check out my Tumblr. You just go to oksunshine.net. It's oksunshine.net. And it'll redirect you to my Tumblr. I'm also on Twitter under that same name, oksunshine. So pretty much I'll announce every time I do a stream or post a new wallpaper on my Twitter.
Yeah, and recommended. Like, I to people who are listening, if you're not familiar, because it's all very good work, and there's a wide variety of super, super cool stuff. I wish that your shield design had one, the one with the chains.
Oh, yeah, Divine Intervention. That's basically the first thing I ever done as a Dark Souls fan art was there was a Dark Souls 2 shield contest. And Asonos introduced it to me and said I should totally enter. And I got super excited and researched all the lore I could find on Dark Souls 1. Because at the time I just played through and had no idea what the backstories were for any of the mm-hmm. characters. And I wanted to be able to. And I like the item descriptions behind all the weapons and the shields there, so I wanted to come up with a backstory for each of the shield designs that I submitted to them. But mm-hmm. Gabriel Verdon, he won both the shields that got into the game of Dark Souls 2, and they turned out awesome. So you should definitely check out Gabriel Verdon as well.
Yeah, yeah, I like the shields that are in the game as well. But that chain shield is pretty fabulous. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you for putting this together. I really enjoyed listening to your podcast in the past couple of weeks.
Oh, thanks. Thank you very much.
And there we are. I'd like to say thank you again to Solo, Allison, and, of course, Peter for lending us their time and lending me their time. And kind of putting up with this weird solo bolo episode. And thanks, you guys. I know that I'm not the best interviewer in the world, but hopefully that was entertaining. So next week, there's not an appendix episode for this. Next week, we are going back to our regular schedule. We are going to be talking about Hemwick Charnel Lane with Illusory Wall. I'm very excited about that. If you have any comments for that area, go ahead and hit us up at duckfeed.tv/contact. If you'd like to find the websites for any of the people that I interviewed for this episode, you can find them in the show notes for this episode. And if you would like to help out the show, there are a couple of different ways you can do it. iTunes ratings and reviews are a really good way. Patreon is the best way to support us directly. At patreon.com/duckfeedtv. But you can also, you know, follow us on Twitter. I'm Gary Budd, G-A-R-Y-B-U-H. Cole is at Cole Ross, and with a K. And, you know, just say hi and let people know about the show if you like it, because we appreciate that. And until next time, by the gods, Lawrence, fear it.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon. Mm-hmm.